We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the show. We're going to continue our amazing division-by-division coverage of the changes in the NBA this season. And just because I think he got bored, or because he's mad at all the wrong things we've been saying, I've brought back Michael McNamara. Or actually, he brought himself back. He's really in charge here. He tells me what to do. To talk about what he's seen and some other stuff, too, that he wants to chat about. So, Michael, welcome back to the podcast.
Somebody sends out a bat signal saying that there's going to be a conversation about the Southeast Division, and you want me to stay away? Good luck with that.
Yeah, they've got, like, amazing teams like the Wizards. It's no Central Division, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, no, I'm hoping for the first division where all five teams go 41-41.
That could be this. No, no.
You don't think that's possible? Possible.
It's possible in this division. It's not. It's more possible that the Central Division will be a one that has all people going, like, 37 wins. I think that's more in play than this one being all the same.
I don't know. That's what I'm going for. A five-way tiebreaker to decide.
Well, now you've ruined. So everybody, Southeast Division, everyone gets 41 wins.
Oh, that's what I'm rooting for. But as you know, as a Pelicans fan, there's no way that everything I root for happens.
Right.
So, I had to talk about that division, and I had to just jump on with you. I listen to the pod, obviously. Every time you guys put one out, I miss talking to my buddy Ryan about this team, and the season's getting closer, so just had to catch up.
That's right. So people are listening to this. Media Day will have already happened probably by the time you're listening to this. So the season's here.
What one question would you ask any player, coach, GM, whatever, and they're shot up with truth serum? What would be your one?
Honestly, it would probably be about Tyreke Evans and if they think he's going to play a minute this year.
Yeah, I would have to ask Anthony Davis about the effort last year. That was probably the most confusing thing to me, is there was this guy who we know has a tremendous work ethic who had just signed this contract, and he was out of it in games last year, and I understand the team was depleted and, you know, yada, 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 but that was still the thing that I got to admit still bothers me the most about last year is everything goes wrong and, yeah, there's problems or whatever, but because we're in agreement that there was games where he was not giving full effort, correct?
Yeah, well, I think that right around by game seven, I was starting to feel like he wasn't trying that hard in some of those games.
Yeah.
Of course, they were already at that point 0-7, or was it 1-6? I don't think, had they gotten their first win? I don't remember. It was so horrible, I don't really want to remember.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is, you know what my most favorited tweet ever is right now?
Mm.
Was me saying about last season, I think last season went about as bad as it possibly could. That's the most favorited tweet of mine.
You don't think it could have went worse?
I don't really. Like, the only possibility would be a career ending something.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, that's worse.
That's worse, but I mean, even that, like, at least you would have some sort of closure. You would be like, okay, that guy's done. Like, I know it, but what we saw last year was just a cluster you could read nothing from and made the basketball joyless. Like, I had my favorite game last year was Davis scoring 59. My second favorite game was a game that had Tim Frazier as a prominent role.
Mm, the man. They could have traded some expiring contracts for some longer bad term guy. Like, that's something that I hear said quite a bit is it can't get any worse. Things could always get worse. Always. I could imagine a couple of ways that – they could have not found Tim Frazier. Like, that's a real universe that could have happened, and he's not the greatest, but
– He's destined. He's destined for my team.
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna ride the Tim Frazier train until he has, like, a 8 PER next season and looks like Austin Rivers.
Yeah. The Tim Frazier train would probably look like – one of those, you ever go to those kids' amusement parks and they have like the mini train that you can't fit on as an adult kind of riding around? That would be the Tim Frazier train.
I can't believe you said that about my boy.
No, I like him, but yeah, I was just curious. I mean, I obviously heard a lot of your opinions, but now as you kind of stand back on everything on this off season, I haven't really heard you give an overall grade yet, now that you know not only what the team did, but realistically the options for other paths they could have taken. What grade would you give that? How happy would you say you're with that?
I would give them a solid B, and I am happy with the things that they did. It's no longer we're going to try to ride a couple names and hope that they produce what they've never produced. Instead, they're building a baseline and saying, this is at least the floor. We actually can't be worse than this probably, because we're going to have enough depth that we can't be worse than this. And hopefully that'll work out. I can't look at any of these things. I know some people are scared by the Solomon Hill contract because he hasn't proven it, really. But I'm not terrified he's going to be useless. I'm not worried about that. There's something there that I think he will be a solid average contributor for this team for a long time. And we've been so short on it. It's either boom or bust with every single one of our guys. And you always said that they were always high variances. Either the guy was going to be really good or he's going to be awful. Well, if you get enough mediocre guys or good, solid guys, you're going to have at least that baseline of we're not terrible, and Anthony Davis can hopefully carry us to good on an individual night here and there.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that, but I would give it a B too, but it would be solely because of the Solomon Hill. I mean, I've slightly preferred Jamal Murray over Buddy Hield, but not to a point where, you know, I'm 100% sure either way and, you know, are going to get mad over the other. But the Solomon Hill, I agree with everything you said, but don't you think that we'll look back in a year, 2 years, 3 years, and there'll be a couple of guys who sign for between $2 or $5 million a year that give exactly what you just described as kind of what you're expecting from Solomon Hill?
That's always the case. And there is nothing that was more irritating to me last year than watching certain people all through the playoffs talk about how Bismack Biyombo signed for $3 million a year. Like, well, that's nice. Like, who the frick cares? Like, nobody knew Bismack Biyombo was going to be a really good contributor for a team. So someone got a bargain on him. And how much is he being paid this year? Like, it was just a freak occurrence that happened. And there's always a couple guys who end up like that. So I'm not...
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's just a value that, like, if Solomon Hill has the same season but does nothing in the playoffs, what do you think he would have gotten on the market?
I actually think he'd probably gotten the same deal.
Wow. Yeah, so I guess that's where you and I totally disagree.
Well, my reasoning is I think Dell Demps wanted him and had that contract in mind for a while. I really do.
Yeah, but you're still going against what you're bidding against.
Hill was signed right off the bat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's part. I think he was offered $10 million a year by a couple of teams. I'm just saying he would have been offered $5 million a year by a couple of teams, and maybe we would have had to get him for 6 or 7. It's just a value thing, and, you know, value only matters if you could have gotten something else. I'm just saying I would have gone in that way. I would have tried to find players that I would have had similar expectations with, you know, for a couple million, hope Quincy came back, and then, you know, just not spent that money. But if he does turn into another Damari Carroll or, you know, any of those other guys, it'll definitely be a value contract. I guess that's kind of what you're playing on is, yeah, you could have went out and signed a Brandon Rush for 1 year, $4 million or whatever, but then if he is as good as Solomon Hill could be, then now you got to pay him $18 million a year, where you're kind of protecting yourself against that possibility with Solomon Hill. But that was just the only one that I didn't love. I loved Etuan Moore. I think, you know, I loved Langston Galloway. I mean, he was a guy that I think one of my last pieces I ever wrote was just flat out saying to Dell, go get this guy. He's going to be a guy that fits. I love the Chuck Diallo pick. There were the other moves I loved. So the Solomon Hill was the only one I had a little bit of a hesitation with. I would have preferred to see, you know, go get bargains.
So you know what my one contract is that I wish was different?
Langston Galloway being longer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like that and even the Terrence Jones ones. Like, I'll sit here and say, you know, hey, if Terrence Jones comes in and he plays really well, great. That's just a bonus to us right at this point. But the reality is they got him on a one-year deal. So if he comes in and he plays back to even 80% of what he was 2 years ago for Houston, we have there's no leverage to be gained. We got a one-season rental out of him, and now we got to figure out cap room to sign him if we want to keep him. Like, it's not – there's no real advantage – to that deal for us, except that we get a one-year tryout of a guy who could be okay.
Right, and those are the kind of opportunity costs that you miss out on because you're paying him. Because imagine a scenario in which they don't sign Solomon Hill and they go out and, you know, I just keep throwing out the name Brandon Rush, but it's just, it's the level of contract I'm thinking, 1 year, $4 million, $5 million, whatever, and now all of a sudden you have $7 million extra to play with. Now, Langston Galloway isn't coming on basically a one-year prove-it contract where he's trying to get more. You could actually give him the $7, $8 million for multiple years. Same with Terrence Jones, is you could say, okay, we'll give you a little more than you could get on the market, but you give us a couple more years. So those are the opportunity costs where, you know, some of the argument would be, well, who else are you going to get other than Solomon Hill? But you could have theoretically tied up those two guys a little longer for maybe a slight decrease from Solomon Hill to a Wesley Johnson or a, you know, a Brandon Rush type. So that's all I'm saying is, for me, for Solomon Hill, to live up to that contract and to be able to offset the opportunity cost that you had, he's going to have to be basically the guy that Dell Demps is thinking that he could be. And, you know, we'll see. I wouldn't have bet on it, but there's a lot of things I wouldn't have bet on that I would have been wrong, or things that I bet on. But that was just my personal one.
Okay.
But the most interesting one I heard you guys talk on last podcast is Lance, and, you know,
$100,000 guaranteed.
Yeah. I mean, to me, though, that's almost telling me that a guy's, I mean, they didn't give that to Sacre. They didn't give that to Chris Copeland. Like, we know those guys aren't making the team. That almost feels like he's going to make the team. I know it sounds really weird, but
I think you're jumping to conclusions there.
Okay, well, hear me out.
There are a lot of teams that partially guarantee training camp contracts.
Rarely when they sign a guy. I mean, imagine going to your owner and basically telling him you just flushed $100,000 down the toilet for what? For a guy to participate in a couple of practices and preseason games that other people would have done for free. Like, I know it's just $100,000 and that's paper money, you know, to these people or whatever, but it wouldn't look right. Like, it would look... its perception would be really odd, you know, and it would make you seem like you're kind of careless if you did that with the boss's money. It doesn't matter how much the amount is, just the principle. I don't know. I think he makes the team. I don't know if I want him to, but I think he makes it, and you guys felt it was going to be Alonzo Gee on the way out. I don't. I think either Ajinsa or Tyreek Evans is gone, and Lance makes the team at the end of October.
I don't see how you move either of those guys without moving something of value with them.
So you think Ajinsa is actually a definite negative asset to all 29 other teams right now?
So the way I look at Ajinsa is, while I don't think anyone is going to look at his service and blink, like, so if somebody went in a vacuum was like, I could have a backup center named Alexi Ajinsa and I would have to pay him $4 million a year, none of them are going to think that's unreasonable. But we just went through an offseason where there was a glut of centers. There were centers just sitting around on the market hoping anyone would come around and sign them. Happened for a lot of teams. Most teams that had a center that needed a center, they got them really quick, and they don't need any more centers, really. So if you're going to go look at the league, finding a team that needs a backup center, we're going to have to wait for an injury. That's the only real option we have, is hope some center somewhere gets hurt, and they're going to say, well, we'll take Alexi Ajinsa then.
You know who needs one right now until they develop their backup? And as soon as I say the team, you're going to say, oh, yeah, they'd be interested in him for obvious reasons. The Toronto Raptors. That guy dominates against the Raptors every single time. Like, dominates.
He does.
Every time he plays them. And right now their backup would be Jakob Poeltl, who is not ready at all yet. This is a team.
Wait. Is it Poeltl?
I don't know. Sure. That's how they say it out here in Utah. Poeltl. They are trying to win 55 to 60 games. They don't have time to have a rookie in the constant, you know, in the definite rotation. They'll develop him. Ajinsa dominates against them every single time he plays them. Their games are broadcast in Punjabi. Like, it's just a natural fit. I have no clue what the Punjabi part has.
Yeah, I don't.
But
French.
I know, but they cross in some dialect. I have no clue.
Okay.
But
sure.
There's an example of an absolutely perfect fit.
Okay. Any chance it could be Dante Cunningham?
The only reason I would say no is because this team seems to be all in on defense and character, and I think that Darren Erman's favorite player is Dante Cunningham.
Good God.
but he's also a guy that might be a little easier to move than Ajinsa. So, they've gotten rid of people that they've liked before to make things move, to make things work. But, I think Lance makes the team. I think they're so desperate. The quote that always stays in my head is, do you remember, was it Amin, or did you bring it up when we were talking to Amin, where Gentry has that quote about how he'll play the devil if it helps him get wins?
Yeah, I think it was Amin.
Yeah. I think if Lance Stephenson comes in and shows maturity, he's on the team. That's all he's got to show them. If he doesn't do that, then it's an easy decision. But I think they're hoping against hope that he just shows that he's been humbled, he's mature now, and he's willing to do whatever he takes. I think they're hoping really bad that happens, and they will find a way.
Okay.
So, another thing.
I don't want him on the team. Just give the ball to Galloway and Frazier and Moore, and let's move on.
Yeah. The other thing, just listening, you guys touched on a little bit, but I just want to get your really quickly on is the Drew injury. I know that it made you, really sad, upset, or whatever. I guess I just feel like that injury scares me the most, because I guess my biggest fear going into this season for this team is that Buddy Hield is asked to do too much.
Okay.
And I just feel like if he was playing next to Drew on both ends of the court, we wouldn't have had to worry about that. Is there any bigger concern? Obviously, big picture, less wins or whatever, but is there any single player, do you think, that could be more affected by a long absence from Drew Holiday than Buddy Hield on this team?
Then Buddy Hield? Probably not. Like, the way I want to say Anthony Davis, because think about these guards. I guess Frazier. Other than Frazier, is there anybody on this team who you think is going to be able to run a masterful set with Anthony Davis and get him the ball where he needs it all the time?
Not in just set up the offense. And I really think that Etuan Moore and Quincy Pondexter are going to surprise us as far as how they make plays within the offense while Drew's gone.
Okay.
But
you're right, because Hield is coming in. There is a very clear pecking order amongst the guards. Drew's the man, and you defer to him. And if Drew's not there, is Hield going to look at Moore or Galloway or Hill, or those guys, and say, or Frazier, and say, hey, I'm second in that pecking order? No, he's going to think I am the six overall pick of the draft. These guys were all had a fight to even get in the league. I should be the guy with the ball in his hands.
Yeah. Yeah, I just we've had this conversation before, but I firmly believe if Kawhi Leonard and Tony Parker were taken by the Sacramento Kings, they become about 50 to 60% of the players that they've become. I firmly believe if Ben McLemore was taken by the San Antonio Spurs, he's 200 to 300% the player he is now. And I think a big part of that is when you could bring a guy in. I mean, Kawhi Leonard, think about his evolution. It was just kind of, okay, we'll start on the corner three, but you don't create your own shot. You don't have to do anything. That's year one. Then year two, we add this little part to your game. Year three, we add this. And it's like that's how you make – there's some guys who are going to be a superstar no matter what, or a star no matter what. I think about in every draft class, there's 8 to 12 guys that could be anywhere on the spectrum from, like, you know, star/superstar is the ceiling, and then whatever Ben McLemore is the floor. And I really think that what you become is based on the situation you go into. And the Drew thing, I think, more than anything, just made me worry a little bit about Buddy going into this year.
So you don't think Gentry can get Buddy to do what he needs to?
I think that that's going to be – I think that they're going to need – that's I guess that's the problem is they're going to need him to do things.
Right.
And, you know, it's not going to be – he's not going to just be able to play off people. And, you know, we always hear how they say, oh, playing with these guys, the game is just so much easier. And he's not going to have that this year. So that worries me a little bit, but that – brings me to my last thing I wanted to ask you about the Pelicans, and then can move on to something else real quick. Let's say that deals were out there where you could basically package Tyreek and either Ajinsa or Dante Cunningham. You know, a team gets the insurance money or just gets players off their roster, whatever. So for the sake of this, I'm going to put these six players out there, and I want you to rank them. As far as which ones you do.
So am I ranking them for basketball talent, or am I ranking them for desirability based on their basketball talent and contract?
However you want to do it. Basically, I'm your assistant GM. I bring these six deals to you, and Tom Benson, and you know, as he's eating a bowl of Skittles and swashing around some wine, says, you got to take one of these.
Skittles and wine?
Oh, yeah. That's the combo right there. I didn't even say what kind of wine. I'm just going to leave that to your imagination. So these are the six deals. The first three, again, this is Tyreek, and you could either put a Ajinsa or Cunningham in it. I don't care. The first three involve no pick.
Okay.
You could have behind door number one, Greg Monroe. Door number two, Wilson Chandler. Door number three, Rudy Gay. And I mean, I'm keeping these realistic. These are all guys who are out there who could be dumped, whose team might want nothing to do with them. And then the last three all involve your first round pick. Let's say I let you keep it top three protected. I'm nice. I let you keep it top three protected. So the same deals, top three protected, Nerlens Noel, Jahlil Okafor, and Vucevic. So those are the six deals on the table to you right now. Which one?
All right, so I have to rank them?
Give me the ones that you would even consider. So give me the ones that you would eliminate. Right.
So I'm not doing Wilson Chandler.
Okay.
His injury, I mean, he had hip surgery. The dude's never been healthy ever in his career. He might fill a hole, but I've never been, like, he's just me. So... Not Wilson Chandler's out. I don't care. Mm-hmm. God, you're making me think about Rudy Gay. How long is his contract?
So he's the reason why he's available is because he's basically said that he's opting out and hitting free agency next year.
So he's a rental. So can I get a guarantee that he's going to opt out this summer?
Yeah.
Then I would consider Rudy Gay still. As long as I know it's a one-year thing, I'm just trading players I don't really need for another player I may work out okay. I can do that. Greg Monroe, he's also basically a rental. I would still consider Greg Monroe.
Okay, so you're considering two of the three. How about the ones in which you've got to part with your first-round pick? Which of those, any of those you're throwing out? Nerlens Noel, Okafor, and Vucevic.
Wow. No, I'm not trading my pick for any of those guys.
All right, so the two you're considering are Rudy Gay and Greg Monroe.
Yeah, and the reason... So, yeah, pretty much. Like, all three of those guys. Like, Jahlil Okafor, he had a okay rookie season, but... He doesn't rebound the ball, and maybe he will at some point. I don't see that he's going to ever be a difference maker. And Noel has some amazing positives in his ledger and some amazing negatives. Like, that guy is unbelievably bad at certain things and unbelievably good at certain things. And I can't decide if that means he's ever going to be useful in the long term or not. And then Vooch. Vooch is the one I had to think about.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's a net negative on defense. There's no question about it. But he's got some nice offensive talent, and he's a good rebounder.
Yeah, him and Gay are the ones I actually like most on this list, with the knowledge that, you know, that they would have to say that they're willing to play 20 to 25 minutes a game off the bench and be happy with it. But
do you think you would do that with Vooch in this team?
Yeah, I really You'd think...
You'd still start Ashik?
I would. I really like moving forward in this league the Enes Kanter role. I really, you know, and I would do the same with both, but yeah, you talk about a net negative on defense, and I agree with that, but I think that's so marginalized when you're going against second unit teams, and you know, you really do that in the correct way at the correct times, you know, with the correct rotations. I really, and you know, I would like that with Rudy Gay also. Is so you take a guy like Rudy Gay who's inefficient. Well, what do we mean when we say he's inefficient? It's he's only getting us 1.1 or 1.2 points per shot, and that really sucks when you're talking about the best players in the league. And if he's on the court at the same time that James Harden is on the court, James Harden's team is going to outscore Rudy Gay's team because of the efficiency. But if Rudy Gay's on the court the same time that Patrick Beverley and Marcus Thornton are on the court, then all of a sudden he's not inefficient in the way, you know, in those specific times of the game. It's when he's taking away shots from Anthony Davis that, you know, he makes you rip your hair out. But if he's taking away shots from Dante Cunningham, Langston Galloway, et cetera, in that context, he's not inefficient. So I really would be interested in the Pelicans making a move for a guy like that, but again, only if they're willing to be in that role, because I don't want a high-usage, offensive-minded player that's a net negative on defense really sharing the court all that often with Anthony Davis.
Yeah. And, you know, the Kings are collecting every center they can. So they might be really in for, like, a Ajinsa trade. They might really like that.
Yeah, I actually did my GM with the Kings on NBA 2K17, and I won a title within 4 years. So the whatever guy became a stud, the guy that they took 13, I don't know.
Papa Giannis?
Oh, my God. He, I mean.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, a stud in context. They brought him off the bench. But almost every game, he went 6-for-7 with 9 rebounds. Like, he was just, he basically was like what Jokic is. Like, he became a monster. But I won it by, my first move was to trade Cousins. I got that Lakers pick and Dario Saric from Philly. And then I kind of built my team up through the draft, and then I just re-signed Cousins 2 years later. It was a stroke of brilliance.
I'm sure he'd just come roaring right back.
I know, that was completely realistic. but yeah, I find it so interesting the situation that Dell is in, because it's really hard for me to imagine that he's on the hot seat and he holds on to that next year's first round pick, if that's the case, right? Like,
yeah.
Why would he do both of those things, you know?
Yeah. So I actually expect that the trade will be made. But I also, I'm still 100% behind the idea that Danny Ferry will be our GM come next draft.
But I mean, wouldn't he have to kind of sign, like, how do you, so let's say you're Danny Ferry and you're like, I think I could be this team's next GM. I'm rooting for Dell, but that's realistic. And then Dell comes to you and says, hey, I could get Vucevic given up next year's first. And you know that that helps this guy who's your friend who brought you in possibly keep his job, but then it would hurt you if you got the job. Like, how weird would that be? Like, what would you do in that situation?
So the one thing about Danny Ferry is I don't think he's ever, I think he's going to have a new GM position regardless of whether it's with the Pelicans or not. So you just try to help make the best decision you can and advise Dell that way. Because you also don't want to... You want to make sure that it doesn't look like you backstabbed Dell.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, how do you do that and then still have your first round pick next year? Like, I just, it's so hard for me to imagine
you,
this.
You try to help him find the best possible trade for that first round pick.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's going to be interesting, but I think Lance is on this team. I don't think it'll be a big trade like that, but I still think it's going to be Tyreek in some fashion will be the one out the door to make the room for Lance. So
I think that's wishful thinking. I think Tyreek will be on this team for most of the season.
Hmm. All right, we shall see.
Yeah.
All right, now I know everybody wants to get to the South. East, what is it? I don't even know the division. Southeast
Division.
There
yeah.
you go. I know everybody yeah. wants to get to that, but Ryan, I've been away for a couple of months. You can imagine, you know, I had rants every once in a while. I don't have anybody here. I got my wife who doesn't like to hear my stuff regardless. I got my dogs who don't get to understand my rants. I've had nowhere to spill it out. So I am going to spill out a couple to you. I want you, though, to tell me if I'm just becoming a cranky old man or if I am justified that these things chap my ass.
All right.
So I don't know how you want to do it, but let me go. You could ask any follow-up, whatever you want, but I'm gonna go on these. I've stopped writing.
Have you been, like, practicing in front of the mirror?
I have. I mean, I've been practicing my head. Like, so most of these come from... You know, I'm not writing anymore. I'm not doing this podcast anymore. So what I've been doing is I've been reading a lot more other people's stuff and listening to other podcasts. And I'm walking my dogs. I'm on the podcast. And I want to scream at the person briefly. And I have no way to vent these. So this is where most of these are coming from. It's just I was all consumed with Michael McNamara and I would read my articles, obviously, to edit them, and then I didn't do much outside of myself or the Pelicans. Now I'm reading everything and listening to everything, and these are the things that are just making my blood boil, and I want you to tell me if they're legit or if I'm just turning into a cranky old man.
Okay. Fire away.
All right.
Let's hear your bitter vitriol.
The first one is this... I get it all the time. So, I call it the everybody is saying and the nobody is talking about. This podcast, television show, whatever, I can't tell you how many times something is, everybody's saying that the Broncos are going to be terrible this year, but I just don't buy it. No, everybody is not saying that. And then, or it's the, you know who nobody's talking about is the New York Giants. Nobody's talking about it, but they added a receiver in the second round, and all of a sudden they've got three of them. Yeah, what? And what these are code for is they're basically humble brags in which people are trying to appear so smart, so they say these things that everybody's saying this or nobody's saying that. But here I am, this total dissension of opinion that it sees things that nobody else can see. But if you came out and said it like that, you would sound like a pompous douche. But if you say the, nobody's talking about the Giants, but I think they're going to be good, like that's just a subtle way to be the most pompous douche. And I am not exaggerating when I say that I hear this. See, I don't want to do the
Is everybody doing it?
I don't want to do the everybody or nobody thing. But I would say conservatively on 70 to 75% of each individual podcast I listen to, this statement is said multiple times. I mean, people I really like and respect, it happens so much. I think like Robert Mays on the Grantland NFL podcast does it all the time. But I mean, this is a thing that I just, again, as I've started to listen and read other people more, it's just something that is overwhelming to me and just kind of makes my skin crawl now every time I've heard it. So, this chaps my ass. Is that legit or not?
I don't think it's legit anymore. I really don't. So I get where you're coming from. 100%. I get where you're coming from. And people use it all the time. But I think it's now entered the sports world vernacular. Now it's I want to bring up something else. And this is the way everybody does it now.
I don't know
how much humble bragging there actually is at this point in all situations.
Do you think if I called people out on this to their face, they would, like, do people realize that this is the reason that they're doing it? Or is it just, so you're saying it's more of a subconscious thing where all these people have grown up listening to other people who do it, and that's just how they start a sentence. They're not trying to look.
I think that's the case with some of them. There are definitely some people who probably sit up before their podcast and say, "What highly intelligent thing can I say?" And the only way I could do that is to bring up nobody else is talking about this.
Yeah, there's, and it's because I listen to so many. Like, you don't know how many times I've heard nobody is talking about the Baltimore Ravens this year.
Okay.
But I've heard it on 5 different podcasts that week. How is nobody talking about it? Multiple people are talking about how nobody is talking about the Ravens.
Yes.
That is,
yeah.
So, all right. So that's one you say I should just let it go. I will try.
You're going to hear it everywhere. You're just going to.
All right. Here's one.
Everybody is talking about it.
Here's one that bothers me. I've got to admit, you did this one. This one's very common. Somebody else who did this one that I really respect and I'm honestly going to miss, but Brett Dawson did this on almost every podcast. He talked about the Pelicans. So I'm just giving specifics. I'm not going to say everybody does this because I'm not going to be a hypocrite, but two of my favorite people talking about the Pelicans did this. So it's this form of logic. Why team? So Nate, put any team here. Let's just go with the Pelicans. This is the Pelicans podcast. The Pelicans won 30 games last year. They made this and this improvement, which means they should be 5 to 7 games better. So I'm putting them at 35 wins. That I understand what people think they're doing. And again, this is something where it's so common that people are just taking this from somewhere else. But the two things have nothing to do with each other. Like, if you were to say, so let's say me and bench press. So I bench press 225 pounds today, and then I'm going to go on a routine. And then in 3 weeks, let's see how much I bench press. You know, that would be something that's corollary. The New Orleans Pelicans have the same name as they had last year, but literally nothing else in the equation is the same. So the roster is obviously different, which is part of what you guys are trying to take when you say, well, the roster's different, so they're going to win this many games. But what's really different is the schedule and what they're going to be doing. So in the scenario that I brought up with the bench press, I'm going to bench press in this week and then bench press again in 3 weeks. Those are the same things, same weight, same exact exercise, etc. The Pelicans are not going to be going through the same exercise as they went through last year. There'll literally be thousands of different variables. So what would actually be realistic is if you took this year's Pelicans team and then warped them back in time and they played last year's 82-game schedule with the exact rosters, with the exact people out that day, with the exact people hot that day, or cold that day, with the exact referees, with the exact, you know, all the other variables that go into a game. But that is not happening. They're doing a completely different exercise, and yet you're trying to draw a conclusion based off. It's just so illogical, but it's such a norm for people to do. That is the other one that I've heard on multiple podcasts that just makes my skin crawl.
Okay. I will agree that that's entirely true. And I was actually thinking about this when we talked about our division, the Southwest Division. I murdered the Rockets. I murdered the Grizzlies. I murdered Dallas. I gave them low win totals, and by most people's standards, low win totals. And I sat there and thought about that, and then I thought about what we were saying about the Northwest Division. One of the reasons why I gave the Utah Jazz as many wins as I did was I feel like there's so many teams in the West that aren't as good, aren't as well built as they were, but I don't feel like there's a clear team that was at the bottom that's suddenly going to swoop in and snatch a bunch of wins away from those teams. So if those teams are worse, all of them are worse, there has to be some teams that gain those wins, right? Or they just stay static and they don't actually get any, like, record-wise, they don't get any worse. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just don't like doing that year to year. Like, last year's Pelicans team was not a 30-win team. Like, that's not an absolute. That's what happened. But that season plays out 100 times. Sometimes they win 28, sometimes they win 39, sometimes they win 30. But you're acting like that's a static team, and then we're basing their growth off of that, where really they were anywhere between a 28-win team and a 39-win team just based on all the variables. So if they're going to be 5 wins better this year, they could win 33 or they could win 44, you know, just based off of it. It's just, there's so many variables, and again, the biggest one to me is you are not going to play last year's schedule with all the variables that last year's schedule had. Like, there's literally thousands of things that are different between last year's schedule and this year's schedule, and yet we're still kind of it's just, again, as I listen to more podcasts, this is a pretty resounding logic of how people do things. Almost any time you hear a season preview, it starts with, they win 34 games last year, they made X, Y, and Z move, you know, so then they base the growth off of the 34 wins. But a team that won 34 win games last year could have probably won anywhere between 26 and 42. That's just the win total they happen to have in this particular universe, but that's not a concrete, you know, marker of what that team was.
Okay.
So I just, can we just find a different way to project wins? It doesn't have to be based off of last year and then some kind of equation of additions and subtractions, and then whether we think they were good or bad, we add or subtract a certain number of wins from last year's total. Let's just
I think what you could do is decide, do you think that the offense that this team is going to field is going to be better than average or worse than average? And do the same thing for defense. And then say 41 is baseline if you were perfectly average in both. And then try to set something that way.
I would love that system. I would love it.
We're about to talk about the Southeast Division, so maybe we could do that.
Thank you. All right. The other ones will be a little quicker. This is a Drew Holiday one. It's a two-parter. The first one's going to sound insensitive, but I don't care. So every single time I heard Brett, or you guys didn't do it as much, but, you know, other people on Twitter, whatever, every single time before we start to talk about the basketball implications of this Drew Holiday thing, we have to preface it by saying that we understand that basketball isn't important and this is all about the wife and we wish the best, and we have to do like this 5-minute soliloquy before we get around to talking about what the basketball implications are. And to me, it just rings so hollow and fake. Like, if Ramon Sessions' wife had the same thing and we heard about it, you know, we would say, oh, that's unfortunate. In the same way that if anybody had a benign tumor, you know, we don't want anybody to have one, but we would never think about Ramon Sessions' wife ever again 5 minutes after we heard that news, and it wouldn't affect anything about our lives. The reason we care about Drew Holiday and we don't care about Ramon Sessions or his wife more than we do any other of the 7 billion human beings is because Drew Holiday is on the Pelicans team, and let's just be honest about what it is that we want to talk about when we talk about the Jrue Holiday thing. I just, every single time this was brought up, I had to hear this big 5-minute thing about how it's terrible and how it's more important than basketball and yada yada. Yeah, we all know that. But let's be honest about why we really care about Jrue Holiday, again, more than we do another person. And I'm just throwing Ramon Sessions out there. We don't want anybody to have a brain tumor. But the reason we care about Jrue Holiday and his wife is because he's on this team. If it was Ramon Sessions, we would have never thought about it again.
So I think you just got your invites to the annual holiday picnic revoked.
I don't even know what that's a reference to, but okay.
Every year, I'm assuming they have a picnic or something, right?
That's just racist.
What? Anybody can have a picnic? What does that mean?
That's fine. I think you've been watching one too many of The Wood or what. I don't know. So anyway, if you and I are going to talk about it, I don't want to preface that. But the second and the bigger one is, I think I've been very clear on this podcast. I never got mad at Chris Paul for asking for a trade. I'm honestly fully expecting Anthony Davis to do the same thing in about 3 years or leave in 4. I fully expect that to happen, and I will wish nothing against him. This is a future chat my ass rant. If the Pelicans do everything they did for Jrue Holiday, and they offer him everything that any other team offers him after this season, and he chooses to go somewhere else, that will upset me. Again, I've always been on the player side. Go wherever you want. When your contract is up, you have the full rights. If you know the team hasn't helped you win or whatever, but I would say this would be the one exception for multiple reasons, from him reportedly semi-hiding some of, you know, his past injuries when that trade happens. Everybody blames it on the Sixers, but Jrue Holiday had that information too, from him missing as many games as he have, you know, for the team being as great as they have in this situation. If all of that happens, and then at the end of the year they offer him as much or more than anybody else, you know, and all that, and he goes somewhere else, that will really, really bother me.
So, I see where you're coming from. I will probably feel the same way, except for in a couple instances. If he goes to a team that is very clearly a championship contender, I'm not going to hold it against him.
Ooh.
Like, let's say the Spurs come to him and Tony Parker has retired, or he clearly needs to retire, whatever, and they figure out a way to offer him big money, I'm not going to hold it against him to go play with Leonard and Aldridge. I'm just not.
Yeah.
But if he goes to, say, Chicago or Charlotte, or some mid-tier team that's just there's very little chance he's going to get a ring this year or next year, then, yeah, that would irritate the hell out of me.
See, I would agree 99.9% of the time. I don't agree with that here. I think that this is one of the rare, if only, situations I could remember where a player kind of owes the team. I think he owes it to at least, maybe not a 4-year contract, but at least a 2-year deal to where, look, I never really gave you guys anything. I caused a bit of a problem early on, and then you guys were outstanding to me. I'm going to give you at least 2 years because I owe you that. Like, I would agree with you in every other situation. I don't think a ring, you know, makes up for it when this team has been this great to you. The only one that I would not be upset with is kind of he lied about it actually, but a real Derek Fisher situation where, let's say, his wife is continuing to have complications or whatever, and there's just great doctors in Los Angeles or whatever, so he winds up going to the Clippers or the Lakers with a high focus being on making sure that she gets the best care and he's there with her. That's probably the only one that I would be able to not get mad at him about. But winning a ring, no, he doesn't deserve that yet. He doesn't. And,
wow.
And I'm never like this with any other player.
There's bitterness there.
Like I said.
Why don't you feel that way about Ryan Anderson?
Because I actually, well, because this is the thing, is they didn't. In some ways, if they told him that they wanted him and offered him the 4 years, $80 million, then I would be a little upset.
Oh, I got you.
So
I got
I'm
you.
Saying if I'm saying if the Pelicans really want him, if they're saying, hey, we
okay.
need you, we're going to give you everything that anybody else gives you, and he goes somewhere else. Like I said, I never feel this way. This is an exception. I do not think he deserves the opportunity to go chase a ring right now. I think he's been done so right by this organization, and he's committed a slight wrong at the beginning with not disclosing the injury. I think he owes this organization, and I never, ever feel that way. Like I said, I've already accepted Anthony Davis leaving, and I'm going to have no anger towards him. Drew is the one situation that I don't.
Okay.
And the last one's just real quick. It's about you. You only reply to about 25% of my tweets. That chaps my ass. What is up with that?
I don't respond to a lot of people's tweets though.
No, but it's me.
Yeah.
All right. No, that's fine.
I'll respond to every one of your tweets going forward.
Yes.
I'll say, look what he said.
Yeah, and then people are going to be like, wait, Mike's on Twitter?
Right.
Nope. It's a hit.
Yeah, I thought that was part of it, too. Was I supposed to be letting people know you're on Twitter?
No, you shouldn't, but you know,
all right, so,
you know who I am, so you could respond.
That's right.
All right.
So anyone who's looking for Mike on Twitter, his new handle is HotGirl32.
Yeah.
H-A-W-T.
Or like the Michael Scott infamous little kid lover.
So you know that is one of the weirdest things on Twitter. I'm not talking about that particular thing you just talked about. The weirdest thing on Twitter is, as soon as I broke like 500 people following me, I got like inundated with these sex bots.
Ooh.
Like it was weird. It was like I broke 500 and I was like, oh hey, I'm past 500, and suddenly I got like in like a week I got something like 70. People who followed me, and every time I looked at they're just sex porn people.
Yeah,
I was like, what is that? Anyways,
they don't.
I guess that shouldn't surprise me. It's the internet, but.
Right? But they don't even try to make it look like it could be a real person.
Right.
Like it's just always those cleavage shots, and then you look on their page because I'm curious, not because I'm a pervert or anything. But
right.
It's like all cleavage and butt shots, like. Throw a random tweet out there that says, like, you're going to Arby's and then going to go see Suicide Squad or something like that. But no, it's like...
See, this is what you should be doing now that you're not doing podcasts. You should be coming up with the Sexbot 2.0.
Well, even if...
The Twitter Sexbot 2.0 plan.
I would if I knew you would respond to it. All right, let's get to the Southeast, what everybody's been waiting for.
Southeast Division, and we will make predictions in the new way.
Yes.
So, all right.
I don't even know how much any of these teams won last year. I do not care.
Oh, well, so I'm not even supposed to tell you?
I don't even want to know. I honestly don't know and don't care.
Okay, so let's just say it this way. We're talking about the Orlando Magic, and last year they weren't very good.
Yes. How many games did they win? I'm just kidding.
How many games did they win? I could take a look.
No,
if you'd like to know.
I don't want
to
know. All right.
So what did they do in the offseason? They basically made a tremendous trade. We've already talked about this with the Thunder, but they sent out Ersan Ilyasova, who they traded for in the middle of the season, Devin Marble, Shabazz Napier, and Victor Oladipo. Only Ilyasova and Oladipo were part of the trade to the Thunder, but all those people were traded away during this offseason. They also let Dwayne Dedmon go, Brandon Jennings go, Andrew Nicholson, and the immortal Jason Smith, who we all know and love. So right there, that's actually a pretty significant series of losses. What they brought in was they drafted Steven Zimmerman in the second round. They signed DJ Augustin to a ridiculous contract. Bismack Biyombo, Evan Fournier, they re-signed him. He was actually on the team last year. They went out and stole Jeff Green from the Clippers. And then they traded and brought in Serge Ibaka and Jody Meeks and CJ Wilcox. So I think this is probably the team that had the greatest makeover of any team in the league. Isn't that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, and the one you're leaving out, I think, is the biggest, is their coach.
Right.
I mean, Frank Vogel.
He just resigned.
Yeah, but I mean, going to Frank Vogel, who, you know, it's always funny because Frank Vogel and Eric Spoelstra were top five coaches 2-3 years ago, you know, and then now I don't think anybody would say that, so it's hard to really know. But I think, you know, as much as Tom Thibodeau is getting with what he's going to do with Minnesota, I mean, would you really say that Thibodeau's resume is infinitely more impressive than Vogel's?
No, because they've had basically the same effect on their teams.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest. And I guess just the question I'll ask you is, looking at the moves, do you feel like Frank Vogel signed off and was spearheading every move, or do some of them feel like moves that Vogel was pounding the table for and others make you feel like it was somebody else pulling the strings?
I'll be honest. I feel like this is a completely Frank Vogel team. Like, so what was Vogel known for in Indiana? A pretty vanilla offense and just a hard-nosed defensive team. And the people they got rid of, Brandon Jennings, Ilya Sova, Andrew Nicholson, Dwayne Dedman, Oladipo, who last year made actual strides as a defensive player, but he's still not ranking very well. Like, none of these guys are defensive players.
Right, but then why do you go out and get DJ Augustin and Jeff Green for Big Bunny?
Well,
those are the ones that I'm saying.
But you do get Biyombo and Serge Ibaka.
Right, those are the ones I would say Vogel was banging the table. But do you think, you really think he's saying, go get me DJ Augustin and Jeff? Those are just the ones I think that feel a little off.
Yeah, Augustine's a little off. Green, I could see you have a conversation with him where you're like, we need a veteran wing, and the best one we have left on the market is Jeff Green, which I would say it's wrong because I think Jeff Green's a bad basketball player, but I could see that conversation happening. So I wouldn't say he probably walked in there and said, get me Jeff Green. He was probably like, I got a list of crappy dudes here, and I'll take that one.
Yeah.
DJ Augustin is weird. I don't like that guy has no defense at all. But yeah, so this is where I find this interesting to see if you agree with me. Predicted starters for me is Payton and Fournier. I think they have to be there. And then I think it's gonna be Jeff Green, Gordon, and Ibaka as a starting lineup. And I think Vooch and Biyombo and Hazonia and probably Meeks or Watson and then Augustin off the bench. I don't know how healthy Meeks is. So if Meeks is healthy, probably him. But C.J. Watson's not a bad player, so he could be there very easily as well. So what do you think about that? I just have a feeling that they're going to try to do the same thing with Vooch that you mentioned with Kanter. And it's not a bad idea. I think they're going to want to go defense, and I think Biyombo's going to, I mean, Ibaka and Aaron Gordon and the front court is a better defensive pairing than Vucevic and anybody.
So why wouldn't you think he would just go Ibaka and Biyombo?
Because I think they brought in Jeff Green to be the quote-unquote all-around forward who can shoot. I really do think that Jeff Green has once again managed to be miscast as a secondary attacker off the wing who can also hit the shots and will somehow be a big part of their offense, even though he doesn't deserve to be.
Yeah. I just feel like this team makes so much more sense if they're going a little small, but they're putting Fournier at small forward.
Okay.
That just seems like it would open up like a.
But who do you put in that shooting guard?
See,
then?
That's where I would have, instead of Green, I would have spent that same money. Because didn't they give him something nuts, like 1 year, $15 million?
Yep, they gave him 1 year, big money. I think 15's right.
I mean, to me, I would have... It's just impossible to find a small forward nowadays. Like, I firmly believe that Jay Crowder has a lot more value on the trade market than somebody like Kevin Love, who, despite all the jokes, is definitely a better player.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's impossible to find a small forward, so I would have just had Fournier playing there with, he has some playmaking skills, and mm-hmm. I would have just thrown my money at a shooting guard for a year, waiting on Hezonja, and the future of my team would be Fournier and Hezonja on the wings.
Go after like someone like Etuan Moore?
Yeah, that would have made some sense. That would have been the defense that Vogel wants, with a little bit of playmaking and a lot of shooting. I don't get the... If you're going to move Ibaka to center, then that means that you're going to be playing Biombo pretty much strictly as your backup power forward, and that just messes a lot of things up for me. I think even though Aaron Gordon has to play power forward, he just has to. And if you try to put him in that, you know, in that small forward position, you're just going to waste him and you're not going to get the most out of him. But, you know, you start doing that, I just, to me, Vucevic has got to go. That's just the clear answer to kind of unjumble this entire roster.
So you want to hear something? I was just looking at numbers. Do you know who Aaron Gordon's last season's numbers look surprisingly like for a guy about the exact same age that used to be a New Orleans Hornet Pelican?
David what? No, I don't know.
Al-Farouq Aminu. They're surprisingly similar. Same kind of steals and block numbers, same kind of assist numbers, same kind of points and rebounds.
Yeah.
And the same sort of it's there. And if you think about the two of them, they're both kind of freaky athletes who can rebound and don't have a whole lot of perimeter abilities.
Yeah, I think Gordon has that X factor that Aminu never will, with the, you know, the passion for the game and the you know, just the all-out effort at all times. So, yeah, I could see him being a rich man's Aminu.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I haven't watched him enough to be able to tell you, but it feels like the same kind of player in some respects.
Yeah. So, yeah, he has to play.
People do love his ability to dunk. So.
He has to play there. Biombo and Ibaka have to play, but you can't really play them together. I just... It's such a weird. I don't know. They have a lot of talent, and I think a lot of it is going to be what Vogel wants. But again, those Indiana teams when they were really good had a Granger, had a Paul George, like they had those wing players that if they were going to beat you 90-82, they were going to be good enough offensively because of those guys to get to 90. I don't know with that here. I mean, they could put out some lineups that are horrific as far as spacing and shooting. If you put out a lineup with, I mean, we talk about our unholy trinity when we had Aminu and Tyreek and Ashik. They could do the same type of things with Peyton, Aaron Gordon, Biombo.
All the time.
Yeah, like those could be regular rotations. So I worry a little bit about them. Vucevic has the ability to shoot the 18-20 footer, but I just think by having him on the team, you also make so many people play out of position that, you know, he's just going to have to go.
But if you have Vooch and you have Ibaka out there, both those guys can shoot.
Yeah,
so,
but then you're not playing Gordon, or are you thinking you're going to play Gordon with those guys?
No, that's why I had Gordon on my second unit. That's why I had Vooch on my second unit. I don't know. It is. It is going to be it's a hard mix and match team. I do have one question for you though. Like, based on who they gained and who they lost, do you think that they are clearly worse offensively? Like, clearly worse as an offensive team?
Yeah.
Because I don't look at the team that they rolled out there last year and really think that's like an offensive powerhouse in any respects. Like,
yeah, I think that on certain nights that team was capable of putting up 110 to 115 points.
Especially when Harris is still there.
Yeah, so it would kind of spike the average in a way where 80% of the time last year's Orlando Magic team was going to be a below average offense, but then 15% of the time they would have those spikes where this team is just always going to be a below average. It's going to be hard to envision the game in which a couple of people get hot, you know, where there were games last year where Oladipo and Fournier both went off for 30-plus. I don't see there being a second guy. I mean, of course, Jeff Green's going to have his random Jeff Green game here and there, but not as frequently as Oladipo or Harris. So I don't see where the spikes happen. I always forget mean, median, and mode. What's the one where like the number appears the most often? That's mode, right?
I don't know. Jason is gonna be very mad at
this. This is like simple. Yeah, he's yelling right now the way that I yell when everybody talks about no. but like I think whatever that one is, mode, let's say it is, I think that one, like their mode could be exactly the same. To where 87 points, let's say, is the one that they is the most common number out of the 82 games in both seasons. But okay. I also think last year's team will have more high spikes than this year's team will.
Okay. So then we're going to go and do our – actually, no, I have to play the game with you first. Who is the second highest paid player on the Orlando Magic?
So Fournier's first, so it's between I don't know. What did Fournier get? Did Fournier wind up settling for less than
he didn't
max.
Got? Fournier did
yeah,
not
they
max.
So my choices are Fournier, Ibaka, Vucevic. Oh, no. Green got that stupid $15 million. This is actually a pretty hard one. I don't even know necessarily who's first. I would guess Biyombo, Green. I would say that the second highest paid is Biyombo.
Okay. You are correct, but only because the first and second paid guy are getting paid the exact same. It's a trick question. So Biyombo and Fournier both started at $17 million
exactly.
This year. Exactly? Well, they're never reported in exact numbers, but that is the estimate, is both 17 million.
And then what, you got Green at 15?
Green at 15, and Vooch was extended under the old contract, so he's at almost 12.
And then Ibaka.
And Ibaka's
12.
At 12 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually didn't expect – I knew Biyombo got a nice contract. I kind of expected it to be more in the 14 and 13 range than 17 when I looked at this. I was like, huh. And then, of course, DJ Augustine. Like, is there a guy in the league who screams more than minimum salary backup point guard than Augustine?
I mean, like, he has
maybe $3 million contract if you're being nice to him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand what he's going to do for you. Like, maybe if he's a guy that puts you over the top, if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers and you don't care about money you give him, but I don't understand what the Magic are getting from him, but really, I don't really understand the Ibaka trade from their perspective because, so one, we both agree they're not winning a title this year, right?
Right.
Okay. So now they're going to have two options with Ibaka next year, either 4 years, let's say 115 to 125 million.
Yep.
or let him walk. Yep. Which one of those is appealing to you?
Neither.
Right. So what's the best case scenario?
Yeah, probably keeping him in being average.
Yeah, that's where I don't really get the trade for them, is I really don't understand what the best case scenario, unless you're just really ballsy and you flip them in February to a contender and get more than I guess maybe you thought you could have got for Oladipo. I don't know, but giving him 4 years, $120 million, when he effectively plays the same position as the guy on my roster who probably has the second highest upside, I just don't get it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see with them. But I'm going to – so I'll ask you, their offense, where do you think their offensive rating will be approximately this year?
So I would guess that they are probably going to be right around 25.
And their defensive rating?
Right around 10.
So that gives us a record of –
probably around 37 wins or so.
Okay. Yeah, Man, if Bogle wasn't the coach, I would be ballsy and go really low here. But I really like him, and especially how he could get younger players. I'm going to go...
I mean, if they can eke out a top five defense, I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility with this roster,
yeah.
Do you think?
No. I'm going to get super ballsy here. I'm going to go 42 wins.
Okay. So you think they're going to be like a top five and maybe like a 20 to 25 offense?
Yeah, I think it's going to be ironically like that Scott Skiles effect that he used to have where you get the young players, you get them playing hard from you right out the gate, and you know, you have a guy in Ibaka who knows what it takes. He's in a contract year. I think that they come out and they have a top 5 to 7 defense, and they find a way to get around the 18 to 20 range offensively.
Yeah, my one big question about them is, I wonder what Mario Hezonja is going to do this year.
Yeah,
He had a lot of hype. He was not very good last year.
No.
Although he was a good shooter. So,
but couldn't you see Fournier taking another leap?
Yeah, absolutely.
20 to 23 points.
He's only Fournier. It feels like Fournier's been in the league for a long time. He's only 23.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was just, I remember looking at that Fournier for a Flalo trade and going, that's all they got for a Flalo? And now he's clearly the better player.
Yeah, Flalo's falling off a cliff. Wow.
And with that, I will be splitting this podcast into two at this point. The second part of it will be up tomorrow. I hope you enjoyed this part of it. Michael and I always like to talk. Been a while since we talked as well. Hope you're enjoying it. And thanks for listening to In the Know.